smell that? It's change. And it's a-coming. Is it good? Or is it bad? Survivors will just see opportunity. Coming to you straight from the most reliably biased source on the Matrix, this is the Anarchy and Podcasting Network, and I am the all-seeing, all-knowing, all-benevolent, and all-around good guy, Opti, your hirsute host. Welcome to the Neo-Anarchist Podcast. Hope you enjoyed the Shiawase dossier I laid down for you last time, and now we are back to our regularly scheduled programming. Today you can look forward to digesting the meat and potatoes from the year 2052. Here's how it happened. On the world stage, 2052 saw violence continue to escalate in Azatlan as they continued to fight rebel factions in the Yucatan. In New York, in May, along the Manhattan Bridge, frustrated and militant groups of transients take over and set up base so that no one can use the bridge. Japan received the contract to host the 2056 Olympic Games in Tokyo, but soon after caused a great deal of controversy when they declared metahumans would not be allowed to participate in the games proper, but were only allowed to play in exhibition matches of the sports. In the summer, in the Algonquin Manitou Council, after successfully leading a coup the previous year, Derek Hyson's body is found dead behind his barn. The ultimate leadership of the council will be in flux for a little while afterwards. In November, the UCAS re-elects Alan Adams as its re-elected president, and the CAS does the same with President Edna Wallace. Also in November, a dwarven environmentalist and businessman named Arthur Vogel founds the One World Association, which continues to address environmental issues and politics for many years to come. In Sheer Tarangira, Williamette Compustat, a data processing and research firm, is formed and contracted to oversee all government data backups in the Sheer. Meanwhile, the Seattle Sheer Tarangira trade agreement turns Seattle into the major port for Sheer Tarangira. On the corporation front, in Quebec, Lucien Cross, tech mogul and former financier of Damien Knight, brings his cross-applied technologies from nowhere and achieves A status. This tech company would go places, chummer. In June, Dr. Ronald Habelstam is discovered to have been separating children's brains from their bodies and trying to raise them completely in the Matrix, supposedly as some sort of experiment. UCAS Data Systems revokes his funding. In Spain, the Sol Media Group begins to break into the media market in Azatlan. And near the end of the year, a new technology in the form of BioWare hits the public sphere. Shiawase, among others, make billions instantly with this biological version of cyberware, which is both less intrusive and far more pleasing to the eye. And in Japan, the Yamana family attempts a hostile takeover of the Fuji Corporation and causes a crash of the Chiba Virtual Stock Exchange. In pop culture news, a new form of BTL, or Better Than Life chip, called 2XS, rolls onto the black market and delivers a far more potent experience than normal Beatles, often at the cost of one's sanity. And in the fall, sadly for all the runners out there, it seems that it is no longer fashionable to dress like a street mercenary in polite company. In the news of the strange, the University of Seattle removes fire elemental summoning from their final exams after insurance companies raise their rates through the roof, which incidentally have been burned off already a number of times. And in Greece, a Gorgon is captured for the first time on film using its petrification ability. Now we're going to come to our newer segment that I am going to call Shadowing the Runners. Notable shadow runners and famous shadow runs. As always, at this point, if you want to learn this stuff on the street instead of here, be warned about spoilers and all that. Sit right back and you'll hear a tale of two runners from 2052. The first, my personal chummer, Derek Montgomery. Folks call him Dirk. Calling Dirk a shadow runner is perhaps a little bit of a stretch since, while he did run the shadows, he was more of a PI. Tried to keep most of his business legit. Honestly, reminds me of those old noir detective movies from last century, complete with trench coat and hat. Old Dirk had joined up with Lone Star once upon a time and went through their training, This made him some pals before he decided that that life wasn't for him. Of course, Lone Star doesn't train people for free, and so the way that they figured it, Dirk owed them for training that he couldn't give back. So he became a sort of wanted man and ditched his sin. Dirk is good with a pistol, and although he's got a cyber arm now, back in 52 he didn't. His real talents were reading people and an almost uncanny ability to put pieces together, see what's out of place. He had wits. Not smarts, but wits. And he was a real good guy to have at your back. Dirk worked out of Seattle back then, had a bunch of well-connected pals like Buddy the Decker and the world-famous Fast Jack. He eventually moved out to the Sioux Nation and took up data analysis of all things. He rarely ventures out anymore. Second runner on today's docket is Da Professor. Da Professor is a street name of Peter Claris. Pete ran the shadows of Chicago back in 52 as muscle and protection from the mob. He was a reluctant shadow runner, but back in those days there weren't a lot of options for a troll living on the streets. Peter changed into a troll back in his youth and left a life of privilege and promise in order to find a cure for his troll nature. He spent many years in the employ of the mob and devoted every bit he earned and every ounce of free time to finding a cure. This guy was a genius. Just as a side note, trolls aren't dumb. They're not intellectually challenged like most people seem to think. Yeah, there's some hormones that make it a little bit harder to focus, and changing from a human to a troll requires a lot of relearning what came naturally before, but it can be done, even if most just gave up. Well, like I said, Peter was brilliant. He fully embraced the shadows at some point, and even crossed swords with his former pals in the mob and lived to tell about it. Not an easy feat. Some say he actually found a cure for himself, but refused to take it, after realizing he could protect those he loved better as a troll than he could as a human. Peter's pretty old for a troll now, but he's still around and kicking in Chicago. Stop by and see him and the missus, if you can find him. He may run the shadows, but he's done more good for his little hood in Chicago than most legit CEOs I know. Better folk you'll never meet. Now, for the big run of 2052. This run gets to the heart of a lot of things that have been building up for the last few years behind the scenes. See, Dirk Montgomery gets himself into trouble in 2052. He's surrounded himself with dames he cares about and gets too involved with every pretty face that darkens his doorstep. So it was when this gal came gunning for Dirk. He survives and figures that she was gunning for him because her sister was involved with Dirk and now she's dead. Dirk starts to investigate, and another job he's running puts him right in the middle of researching a new form of Better Than Life or Beetle Chip called 2XS. He eventually links this with the rise of Crash Cart, a dock wagon competitor, who seems to have a preternatural sense for where to be at the right time. Meanwhile, Dirk is also tracking his sister, who got hooked on the Beatles, and her trail led to the Universal Brotherhood, a quasi-religious organization dedicated to the peace and wholesome unity of all meta-humanity, blah blah blah. Dirk starts to poke his nose where it doesn't belong, and with the help of his pal Buddy, the Aces Decker, what used to be on Echo Mirage and helped save the world during the first crash. Anyway, they dig too deep, and Buddy gets geeked. When Dirk's sis is transferred from the Universal Brotherhood to a Yamatetsu facility who's in league with Crash Cart, Dirk puts together the real Aces group of runners, particularly from the Wrecking Crew, and infiltrates the Yamatetsu facility. What they find goes off the rails. They found an underground cave that led to a swarm of what could only be described as alternately half-human wasps or giant wasp spirits. This hive of monstrosities was resistant to normal weaponry, and they faced what seemed to be some sort of wasp shaman. Gross. And wrong. Gross and wrong. They eventually rescued Dirk's sister, blew up the hive, but at a pretty high cost. The Wrecking Crew was pretty much decimated, and Dirk lost an arm, while nary a dent was made in what would become an infestation of epic proportions. That was really the first clue many of us had that the corporations were not the only things to fear in the shadows. What do I fear? I fear we have run out of time, little crows, because you have already wasted another perfectly good slot of time listening to the Anarchy in Podcasting Network. The music serving as the background to Audible Anarchy was written by the legend Marshall Parker and reimagined by Unanunium 88. This was the Neo-Anarchist Podcast, and I am your host, Opti, who is now fresh out of his pumpkin spice soy calf latte and is in need of a soy bucks run. Enjoy your freedom. Try not to bug people.